Hi, this is Leonard Lopate. You're listening to WNYC On Demand. Podcasts, streaming, and MP3 downloads available when you want to listen at WNYC.org and iTunes.
WNYC is supported by Austria and her coffee houses, where you can sip and plot a revolution like Trotsky, or probe the unconscious like Freud, or sketch a symphony like Mozart. Learn more at experienceaustria.com.
You have to wonder if Kent Treadle ever gets tired of Handel's Messiah. For the last 2 weeks, the man the New York Times has called the brightest star in New York's choral music world has been involved with three productions of the holiday choral favorite. First, he conducted the Oratorio Society of New York's Messiah. The following week, he played the organ during five performances of the Messiah by the New York Philharmonic. And last night and tonight, he is conducting Music Sacra's version of the Messiah at Carnegie Hall. I'm very pleased that Mr. Treadle has found time in this hectic schedule to join us today. Hi.
Hi there. Delighted to be here.
So, I mean, the silly question, but I have to ask it. Do you ever get tired of the Messiah, or is it one of those pieces that allows you to discover something new each time you perform it?
You know, people ask me that all the time. I could never be tired of Messiah. It is such a deep and rich piece, and there's just so many avenues of exploration that it, I think I will just die thinking that there's still more to do.
Well, how much of the performance sound comes from you, and how much comes from the fact that you're conducting with two different groups?
Well, that's a very interesting question. You know, working with each group opens up new avenues of kind of expressive potential. So it's a combination. It's a combination of the ideas that I have because I'm working with a 200-voice chorus or a 32-voice professional chorus. I mean, there's just a whole, you know, creative circle.
Well, another conductor once told me that one of the major differences between working with non-professional chorus and a professional one is that there's a constant shh sound throughout the amateur performance because people are not breathing as correctly as they are when they're professionals.
Oh, now that's interesting. You see, long ago I heard an amateur chorus in New York, and it had a lot of that sound in it, and I decided that I needed to get involved in the amateur choral scene because I believe that amateur choruses can have depth of tone and can breathe properly and all that kind of thing. So hence my work with the Oratorio Society has been so rewarding. I think when you hear oratorio, you won't hear all that shh, white noise, we call it.
Didn't Handel intend this to be performed during Lent, actually immediately before Easter rather than Christmas?
He did. In fact, you know, opera was suspended during the period of Lent, and so he got into all of his oratorio writing as a result of that.
How did it become associated with Christmas?
Well, of course, the Christmas portion, the original portion, or the first part one of Messiah is such a telling of the Christmas tale. I think that probably by the 1780s, 1790s already, we were hearing it at Christmas. And certainly by the time Oratorio Society did it, December 25th, 1875, in New York, it was a Christmas piece already in the 19th century. In many people's minds, people still do it at Lent. The Royal Choral Society does it on Good Friday over in London.
Do you think it's performed differently for Christmas and for Easter because of emphasis?
Oh, you know, I don't. I would imagine that most people are going to the score, telling the story, regardless of the time of the year or season. When we do, as we did last night, you know, part two is the Lenten portion, really, of this tale. It's deep, and there's a tremendous amount of sorrow in that. And we, you know, we do that just the way we would do it if we were doing it on Good Friday.
You said that he composed it because he couldn't work on an opera during this time. How long did it take him to write this incredible piece of music?
Well, Messiah, of course, you know, we say, and it's true, there's a white-hot light that he seems to have brought this together in a period of about 3 weeks in August, I believe, of 1740. It was premiered in 1741. It may have been 1741 that he did that. He did borrow from himself, and there are movements. Some of these famous choruses, For Unto Us a Child is Born, or And the Glory of the Lord, were taken from his Italian duets for two sopranos. But nonetheless, it was a very short period of time when he drew this together.
And was it written in English?
It was written in English.
He's German.
He was German. And, you know, Now, with Felix Mendelssohn and his Elijah, we have this issue of looking at words that are said in English, and you see the original German intention, and you can see that maybe we need to do some modification. Handel's use of English was miraculously wonderful. So the word settings really, except for maybe a couple of occasions, are just fantastic.
And wrote it with Charles Jennens, who I guess borrowed from the King James Bible.
That's right. Jennens, you know, I think part of the remarkable success of Messiah, of course, is if you just read through the libretto that Jennens put together, it's an amazing flow of text and emotion that connects, you know, throughout. And, of course, one of the amazing things is it's primarily Old Testament text.
My guest is Kent Tridle, who is performing a lot of The Messiah these days. And I should point out that you have ongoing affiliations with all of the organizations you're working with. This is your fifth season as music director of the Oratorio Society of New York.
That's right.
The 200-voice volunteer chorus. You've been an organist with the New York Philharmonic since 1994.
That's right.
Currently the music director of Musica Sacra, the professional chorus that's performing tonight at Carnegie Hall. I mentioned earlier the shh. Is putting on The Messiah with an all-volunteer chorus very different from doing it with a professional chorus?
Well, you know, the two versions that we do are quite different. Oratorio Society, this is, you know, it's a 200-voice chorus. We use a larger orchestra. This is, you know, this is a performance that's really coming out of the 19th century, you know, choral society ideal. It's a performance that will actually blow the roof off the hall. When you want large. It's symphonic, although we use what we now consider to be quick Baroque tempi. You know, a chorus of 200 can move. They really can, especially this chorus. Now, with Musica Sacra, it's a much smaller scale. It's much more transparent textures. It's much more jewel-like in other ways. So they're very different performances.
What about the soloists? Are you using professionals in both cases?
Oh, yes. Yes, we always use professionals. We had a quartet with Oratorio Society that was just marvelous, and we have a terrific quartet which has more early music specialists in it for the Musica Sacra performance.
Well, you have worked with some pretty famous opera singers, Renee Fleming, Jesse Norman, Hai Kyung Hong, Marilyn Horn. Are they also abandoning opera at this time of year, or is this something that they really like to sing?
Well, these singers, you know, my feeling is these are singers who really love to sing this. For example, Susanna Phillips. Susanna sings Musetta at the Met, and I came to know her. I teach a class in oratorio at the Juilliard School, and it was apparent to me when I met Susanna, even in her earlier years, she's still very young, that she loved this repertoire. So my sense is that these singers love to sing this repertoire. And it's a joy to work on it with them.
And they do get audience response. Kevin Dias, who sang bass last night, got a huge cheer from the audience when he took a bow.
Oh, he did. Yeah, all the soloists did. Absolutely, they loved Kevin.
There's always this debate over whether this should be performed with period instruments or not. Where do you stand on that?
That's here's where I stand. I love the period aesthetic, and I try to bring that into actually all of my music making. Although I work with modern instruments, kind of like Le Violon de Roy, I have worked with my partner Arthur very much to develop a core of players who play on modern instruments with a tremendous amount of stylistic flexibility. And so that's what we do. We use modern instruments with a period aesthetic. And that's what I'm doing in New York.
Last night's performance at Carnegie Hall, the trumpeter played offstage during part one and then moved on to the stage near the kettle drums by the end of the show. Why was the trumpet moved around?
Well, that's interesting. And by the way, with the Oratorio Society, the trumpets were just on stage for the whole time. Handel did this a couple of different ways, and we know from his writing that there was a performance where he had the trumpets lontano, which means far away. And that is, in fact, a Musica Sacra tradition that I'm continuing, having picked it up from Richard Westenberg. So we have the trumpets slightly off stage to get that far away effect.
And how much of an adjustment do you have to make as a conductor whether you're performing in a church or whether you're performing in a concert hall like Carnegie.
You know, in a church, we have to make allowance for acoustic, especially if we're at, for example, St. Ignatius, where we have about a four-second acoustic. We have to shorten endings. We have to take different kinds of timing. We have to play the hall.
Because there's so much echo?
That's right, because there's echo. Now, not in all churches, of course, but certainly at St. Ignatius, that's the case, or a European cathedral. At Carnegie, we have a live sound, but we can actually keep a lot of the music, in a sense, tighter. And we play the hall differently.
And what's it like to play the organ in the New York Philharmonic's Messiah after having just finished conducting two different versions of
it? It's wild.
Now you're following somebody else's idea of concept of what the Messiah should sound like.
Well, that's right. I love playing with the Philharmonic because of so many reasons, including I get to watch great conductors. And so anytime I do this, of course, I'm able to see what Toon Koopman's choices or Helmut Rilling's choices were or what their current thinking is about the piece. And it's really fascinating.
Now, if somebody would love to join the Oratorio Society, how do they just apply?
Oh, they can go to oratoriosocietyofnewyork.org or just look at Google Oratorio Society of New York and go to the website, contact, and we'll arrange auditions.
Some conductors favor all male choruses. How do you feel about mixed choruses as opposed to all male?
Handel would
have done it all male, wouldn't he?
Handel would have done it. He did it with boys. That's right. Boys and men, which was the tradition there. And St. Thomas does it that way, and it's just absolutely wonderful. I love mixed choruses, and I love the added warmth and richness that we have as a result in the palette of color that we can use to kind of express the piece.
Ken Tridle will be conducting Musica Sacra's performance of Handel's Messiah tonight at Carnegie Hall. He's the man the New Yorker has called Gotham's choral man of the moment.
Isn't that a blast?
That must excite you an awful lot.
It excites me, but I have to tell you, my colleagues in New York are just fabulous. There are many, many wonderful choral conductors in this town.
And after tonight, are you finished with the Messiah for a while?
I'm actually done for quite a while.
Well, ticket information is on our show page at WNYC.org. It's interesting that the performances you conduct don't even have an organ.
Oh.
Thanks for listening to WNYC On Demand. Please check out the other programs at WNYC.org or on iTunes. This is a free service made available by our listeners. Become a member of WNYC today.